Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the R&R Studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, it's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Ponsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, presented by Tequila Embajador.
Yeah, you definitely have Gus's disciples at all three levels, back end, linebackers, and the D-line. And it's just, it's really cool to see, like, how successful, everywhere Gus has gone, he's been successful. And for him to come here and have the same successful start and endless 2-0 start is really cool to see. I love the way this defense plays, play fast. This defense plays very confident. And you see, like, there's not too many mistakes out there, because what we do is we prepare like no other, and we just able to play fast. And so to see Gus and with his play calling with these guys, it's really fun to see.
That is Raiders linebacker K.J. Wright talking really just a little while ago over at the practice facility in Henderson, talking about Gus Bradley, the Raiders' new defensive coordinator, the first-year defensive coordinator. K.J. played with him back in 2011. I think his first 2 years were played under Gus Bradley with the Seattle Seahawks. That was the beginning of the Legion of Boom. And, you know, Lincoln, and by the way, you're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. on a Wednesday. Lincoln, I wrote in the Las Vegas Review-Journal, I cover the Raiders for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, you know, Gus Bradley coming into this season was set up to be almost a hero to some extent. Now, obviously, it had to work out on the football field, and it still has to work out from this point forward. But the way this defense is playing under Gus Bradley, under his assistants Ron Miles and Richard Smith and Rod Marinelli and everybody else, I think fans are starting to realize, the NFL is starting to realize really what kind of an effect the presence of a new coach can have on one side of the football. And yes, obviously players come into mind, but you can make an argument and make a strong case that Casey Hayward is here because of Gus Bradley. You can make a case that K.J. Wright is here because of Gus Bradley. Maybe Unique Ngakoue is. Some of these newcomers that have had a history with Gus Bradley could be here specifically because of Gus Bradley. So between what he brings to the table and then his ability to identify talent and bring talent in, it's just had such a positive effect. And I think people are really starting to see that now.
When you have a familiarity with the system, you're able to play faster. As we talked about yesterday, most of it's mental. The confidence, the understanding of where you need to be, how what you need to do, and your responsibilities on any given play allows you to play faster. The more muscle memory that you have, the better you are off you are. One of the things that I appreciated about Gruden's offensive system as an offensive lineman is it was incredibly simplistic. I mean, 95% of the time I had the end. I didn't have to think.
Right.
So when you went out there, you went fast because you knew what you were supposed to do all the time. With that being said, to your point, you know, when you have a system or you're familiar with the system, you're familiar with the way a guy calls, you know, defenses or understanding a system, you're allowed to free to do more things, to look for more things, to be more adapt to where you're at, the space that you're at and your responsibilities, because you know what your responsibilities are. So, yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think he does have something to do with that.
You know, when you talk about his system or John Gruden's system was so much easier to digest and understand and really execute, and players are saying the same thing about Gus Bradley, why do coaches then overthink it so much to create systems and schemes and playbooks that are just way too deep, way too thick, way too intensive, and end up having an adverse effect on their players rather than a positive one?
I don't know. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who overthink things. They always try to reinvent the wheel. I mean, it's very simple. This game is very simple. You know, you move the ball and you score, and you score points to have more points than the other team. Defense, you're supposed to stop them, get stops. If you understand what the offense can do or what they're capable of, then you find ways to stop it. But I've also believed that coaching at its best is when you utilize a player's abilities and you create a system that best utilizes their abilities. Does that make sense?
Yeah, without question. Yeah. And it shouldn't never be lost as well that as good as Gus Bradley's scheme is, as good as the teaching is, and I'm a firm believer that the teaching of the system, the coaching up of the players and the play calls on Sunday are hugely important, but it sure is much better when it's KJ Wright and Denzel Perryman and Casey Hayward out there rather than Neville. I won't throw anybody under the bus, but lesser players. So it's kind of a marriage of both concepts where you have a really respected defensive mind and a bunch of great assistant coaches teaching things and overseeing things when it also includes better players. Well, I remember.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, I mean, Denzel Perryman has been the sort of the quarterback of the defense. He's been that middle linebacker with the dot on the back of his helmet, and he's been the go-to guy. When he went out in Pittsburgh, you know, KJ Wright stepped in. You have that luxury playing with Corey Littleton. You have that luxury because they're both familiar with the system, and they understand it. You know, that's a good
thing. And, yeah, no doubt about it. And you know, talent also is important. I'll never forget Doc Rivers talking about how, you know, when he was the coach of the Celtics, they had a bad year one year. And the very next year, they bring in Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett and add him to Paul Pierce and everyone else that they brought in. And all of a sudden, they're the NBA champions. And he's like, I'm not calling any plays differently this year compared to last year. It's just that this year, it's KJ. Or Kevin Garnett. Last year is Brian Scalabrine. So, you know, talent has obviously is the ultimate, cherry on top. But when you do get good coaching and positive coaching and good teaching, you're also going to see the results. And thus far, you've certainly seen that from the Raiders' defense. All right, to some news. Derek Carr was a full participant. It was only a walkthrough today, so keep that in mind. But he was out there. He was a full participant. He told us today that he's of the mindset that he's playing, period. That was a determination that he made almost immediately after he jumped up off the field after getting hurt in Pittsburgh. We'll talk about that, the mindset that's required and the direction that your mind takes you when you are affirmative about something rather than wishy-washy about something. You generally end up where you're determined to go in that regard. And there's a lot to be said about that. So Derek Carr, good to go on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. Two of the Dolphins quarterback has been ruled out with fractured ribs. That means Jacoby Brissett will get the start for the Miami Dolphins. I wouldn't sleep on the Dolphins. I think the Raiders are the better team, especially with the backup quarterback in there for the Dolphins. But don't forget, this Dolphins defense came in last year and did a number on this Raiders offense. Yes, the Raiders should have won that game. They took the lead with 19 seconds left, handed it over to their defense. The Miami Dolphins had the ball starting at their own 25-yard line, no timeouts. The defense wasn't able to secure that win. Fitzpatrick came in off the bench, and there was some magic. Arden Key with a bonehead play. We all know what happened. But from the first quarter to even that point, this Dolphins team gave the Raiders offense a lot of trouble. That's why it was as close as it was to begin with. So I wouldn't sleep on the Dolphins at all. Richie Incognito, once again, did not practice. It's now been almost exactly, actually more than a month now, a month and a week since we last saw Richie Incognito on a practice field. That was in Thousand Oaks, California against the Rams. He suffered a quad injury or calf injury and has not been seen since. I'm growing a little bit dubious on when or if we're really going to see Richie Incognito again, which begs the question, Why wasn't he put on injury reserve 3 weeks ago? Because he's already lost, you know, missed the three games or will miss the three games. It looks like that he would have missed had he been put on IR. In the meantime, he's taken up a roster space. So, and those are pretty hard to come by. And, you know, we'll see if he goes on IR at any time soon. If he does, then he's going to miss three more games, guaranteed, or at the very minimum. So not quite sure what's going on with Richie Incognito. But the fact that he hasn't practiced in a month and we haven't seen him or heard from him, kind of concerned about that. Alex Leatherwood was a full participant today. He had the back injury against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Again, it was only a walkthrough, but it sounds promising, Lincoln, that he's going to be out there as well. And I think this offensive line, the best tonic for this offensive line, which has not played great by any stretch of the imagination, but I think to get it on track and to get it where it needs to be, these guys, whoever it is, whether it's Richie Incognito or just the guards that they have in there right now, they need playing time together, Lincoln.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They need playing time and they need full speed. I mean, look, walkthroughs are one thing. Practice is another thing. This team has not had the luxury of being at full, you know, full team since before the Ravens game, to be honest with you, coming out of the preseason. But for the most part, you know, for what it's worth, this offensive line has not played together in whole until probably the last game, the first half of the last game, because you remember that that Leatherwood didn't finish in the second half. So, yeah, when it comes to things like the running game, the timing, and just overall general pass protection, especially blitz knowledge and understanding, you need snaps together.
And this Dolphins defense is no slouch.
Ooh,
it's
good.
Creative. It's dynamic. I know they gave up a bunch of points last week against the Buffalo Bills, who were kind of licking their wounds after getting beat by the Pittsburgh Steelers in the season opener. So the Buffalo Bills had something, a little something for the Miami Dolphins coming off that loss. And so it was kind of a collective letdown in, you know, across the board for the Dolphins. But there's a lot of things that the Dolphins like to do. They've got a lot of good defensive players. I think Brian Flores is an excellent defensive coach. We'll see if he ever gets it together offensively with the Dolphins. But they present challenges, and especially to an offensive line that's still working out on the kinks, I would imagine.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, they've got a defense, and most notably, you know, Ogbah, one of their defensive ends, is a pretty good standout end who knows how to get some rush on a quarterback. So, when you look at it, there are no slouch. This is a team that you should take seriously, and I know the Raiders will, but you can't overlook just because they don't have their quarterback.
You know, I don't want you to put you in an uncomfortable position here whatsoever, but. You know, from your experience, let's put it that way, from your experience with Richie Incognito, I mean, you know, it's should we be concerned?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the, okay. I said this to you yesterday. I would be surprised if he plays this season. I think Richie Incognito was brought as a insurance policy, almost like a security blanket, because they believed that John Simpson was going to be ready. Okay, or Lester Cotton. They believe they had another option. They did not intend, obviously no one intends on you losing a guy for the year when Denzel Good. So they honestly felt that, you know what, we'll keep Richie as an insurance policy. But when he didn't play in the first game, I had my doubts. Didn't play now, I still have my doubts. The fact that he's still, you know, on the injury list with the calf injury, okay. He didn't play in preseason. He's been limited practice. I don't have the confidence he's going to play at all.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. I think that I agree with you. I think they I think there was some insurance policy to him, but I also felt like with a young center making his first, basically becoming a starter for the first time. A rookie right tackle. I know it's on the other side, so it wouldn't have necessarily been him. But I think for that center and Denzel Good, you know, really becoming a starter a full time starter for the first time in his career, Richie Incognito was a steadying force on that offensive line. And I also think his presence as a run blocker and the dynamic that he brings in the run game was something that they were kind of counting on. And you know, so it's unfortunate that it hasn't worked out. I do wonder. It seems like they're holding out hope, though, Lincoln, because if they didn't, he would have already been put on IR.
But again, we're going into week three. Doesn't look like he didn't practice today, did he? You said he didn't practice?
No, he didn't practice. And here's a key to the whole thing, something worth watching. If they put him on IR at any point, if they put him, let's say tomorrow, they decide, you know, we're putting Richie Incognito on IR. If they put him on IR tomorrow, he would miss the next three games, which this game wouldn't be included. So the Dolphins game, the Chargers game, and what is it, the Denver Broncos after that, I think, or Chicago Bears, somebody. It's three games.
Right.
If they wait until after Sunday to put him on IR, then it'll be another complete three games that he'll miss, because three games will have already gone. So it'll be the next three games that he would miss. And that's the thing. Like, if they think that he's actually – if they believe that he's going to play at some point between now and the next 3 weeks, then he's not going to go on IR, obviously. And that's what makes me believe that they do think there's a chance that he's going to be able to get on the field. Because if not, then just go ahead and put him on IR. And if he ever becomes ready, you can always pull him off. There's no rules anymore in terms of you have to miss the full season or you have to miss eight games. The only rule is you have to miss the next three games, whatever those three games are, from the moment you go on IR. So I don't know. While I'm dubious that he does ever come back, what the Raiders are doing and how they're handling it indicates some sense of hope and belief, I should say, that he is going to come back. Otherwise, he's just wasting a roster spot. They're not going to keep him on the active roster all year and take that 53rd spot on the roster the entire year if they truly believe that he's not going to be able to play.
Again, you're more hopeful than I am.
But then I guess the question is, why are they wasting a roster spot on somebody?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why he's still on the roster now if he hasn't played. So I would probably assume that if he needed to play, he could probably play. Is that what we're thinking?
Well, I mean, he's needed to play.
Why isn't he playing then?
Because they think that he is going to be able to. After the roster's cleared, after the final cuts, after you got down to your 53-man roster, they could have put him on an IR right then, and he would have missed the next three games, which would have been, you know, Ravens, Steelers, the Dolphins, okay? But they didn't, which indicated some belief that he was going to be back within those 3 weeks. Do you understand? Like they don't want to lose him for all three games by putting him on IR. So they think that there's a hope anyway that he'll be back before those three games. Well, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So now the decision is, okay, do you put him on IR now, which would mean he would miss the next three games? And I guess right now, at least anyway, there seems to be some hope that, no, he'll be back before the next three games have elapsed either. So that, you know, otherwise, again, to me, he'd be on the IR right now.
Right.
But there is some sort of a, and I'll say this, you know, almost the same exact situation did unfold last year with the Achilles injury. And they were holding out hope, and he was doing everything he could to get back at some point last season. But then it became a point where it's not working. None of the remedies are working. None of the rest, none of the rehab. It's not having the desired effect. It's time to go have the surgery, and that's that for this season. So it could very well come to that point, and maybe it's more likely than not that it does, but the fact that it hasn't yet shows that John Gruden and Richie and the Raiders medical staff feels like there's still a chance you're going to come back. So let's not overreact and put you on IR and lose you for another three games after this. Now, having said that, they probably should have put him on IR to begin the year. This way he wasn't taking up a roster spot for these first three games. Now, I will say this also. The rules are a little bit different right now, Lincoln, where, you know, you have that 46-man playing roster, game day roster, But remember, it can go to 48 now. You could bring guys up from your practice squad to go from 46 to 48. The caveat is, in order to do that, in order to have that flexibility, you have to suit up 8 offensive linemen. That's why we're seeing some of these offensive linemen coming up from the practice squad. They get promoted on Saturday before the Sunday game. It's because they're allowed to go to 48 while also keeping 8 offensive linemen. It's confusing a little bit, but if you read it, you'll understand. Otherwise, you have to dress out 46 players. So while he is taking a roster spot, there are mechanisms in place so that they can make sure that they have the necessary amount of offensive linemen on a game-to-game basis, because you could go to 48 now from the 46.
So. Yeah.
But, you know, it would be great if Richie Incognito can come back, because I think he makes a difference when he's healthy and when he's right.
He does.
Especially in that run game. And you know, maybe you could shed a little bit of light on what is happening with that run game. I get it that Josh Jacobs isn't there, and that's a huge piece of the puzzle. That's a huge puzzle piece for that run game. But even when he was in there on Monday night, it didn't look like it was hitting on full throttle.
Well, I mean, the short answer is it's not the running back's fault. The offensive line has not done a good job at winning the line of scrimmage.
Yeah,
I mean, we'll talk about it on the other side. Did you watch the Monday night game, Detroit and Green Bay?
I did, yes.
Okay. It's kind of hard to describe, but you know what? I'll explain better on the other side. No, we're up against the break. I'll explain better.
I am looking forward to that. Okay. You're in the huddle with Vinny Monsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. We're going to go into Dr. Lincoln's lab and get some offensive line knowledge when we come back. You're listening to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Wednesday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny and Lincoln on the Sam and Ash text line at 69187 or tweet them at Vinny Bonsignor and at LKennedy72. This is In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Hey, just a reminder, I will be at the Treasure Island on Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. over at the Golden Circle Sportsbook. So if you're in town, come join us. Great place, great food, great drinks, all sorts of TVs to watch everything that's going on. Lots of college football now on Fridays and baseball coming down the home stretch. So fun times over at the Golden Sportsbook at the Treasure Island. And also Saturday, the day before the Raiders play the Miami Dolphins over at Allegiant Stadium beginning at 5 o'clock, I'll be over at the Rockstar Bar and Grill over on Las Vegas Boulevard. It's the day before get together, so let's meet up again, just like we did on Sunday night a couple of weeks ago, which was fabulous, by the way. I had a lot of fun meeting everybody and talking to everybody. It's just a great way to get together, talk Raider football. If you guys have any questions, you know the whole drill. We'll have music and a DJ and they're going to have giveaways and all that sort of stuff, just like they did a couple of weeks ago. So join us over at the Rockstar Bar and Grill, and let's have some fun the day before the Raiders play the Miami Dolphins over at Allegiant Stadium. Lincoln, you were mentioning some offensive line knowledge, or getting ready to drop some offensive line knowledge on us. So without further ado, I'm going to let you have the floor.
Well, let me – it's kind of difficult when you don't have a visual, but we're on radio, yeah. So we have to do what we do. So I want you to imagine – you said you watched the Monday night game, the Lions versus the Packers, right?
Yes.
Did you notice how successful the running game was for the Lions, especially in the first half when they were controlling the line of scrimmage? Imagine the line of scrimmage. Anytime you get defensive penetration, it'll disrupt a run, unless that's what you're calling for, like a trap or a kickout block or something like that. You want somebody, or a draw. You know, you want to try to confuse them. But most of the runs that the Raiders do are either stretch runs or what we call man blocking runs. Power, you have a double team at the point of attack, you have a kick out block, you have a lead lineman to lead up in the hole to lead the running back. That's man blocking. The problem with the Raiders right now, and it happened especially last week in the game, is that the guards in the center, the interior part, are not winning the line of scrimmage. They're not controlling the line of scrimmage. They're allowing too much penetration. When they get pushed in the backfield, it makes the back cut before he really wants to. And that's no good. So that's why a lot of those runs don't go for much. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no doubt about it. What do they need to do now to fix it?
Well, I mean, it's just timing. It's one, first of all, you got to, it's not about hitting a sled. It's about going up against somebody full speed. You got to get used to doing it. You got to play with a lower center of gravity. Both Illuminor as well as Simpson have got to play with a lower center, and Andre James, for that matter, have got to play with a lower sense of gravity, and they got to drop it down and got to get their pads under pads. You can't be too high, because when you're too high, the defense linemen, especially like Cameron Hayward and those guys, will push you back.
Right, absolutely. We're going to go out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in a good friend of both of ours, Lincoln, none other than Paul Gutierrez. He covers the Raiders for ESPN, does a fantastic job, has been doing it a long time. Also co-author with Lincoln Kennedy on a great new book called If These Walls Could Talk. Paul, thanks so much for spending some time with us in the huddle. How are you doing today?
Paul, are you there? Paul. He didn't want to talk to me.
Uh-oh. we're going to work on getting Paul back. So if DeMond can give us a word when Paul comes back. But before that, we're going to go we're going to try to we're getting a dial tone.
Somebody didn't pay their bill.
Yeah, exactly. DeMond, can we do something about the
Uh-oh. Well, I can't hear anything. You hear a dial tone?
I'm getting a busy signal, I should say.
I don't have anything in my ear.
All right, hang on.
Only you, just you.
That could be the case. So I'm going to work through it. You know, when it comes to the offensive line, and I think that's where Richie Incognito was so critical, or could still be critical, Lincoln, in terms of the timing mechanism and getting guys together. But you know, the other truth of the matter is, it's just really difficult when your two starting guards go down.
Not making excuses. You're absolutely right. It is difficult when your starting guards go down, because for what it was worth, I mean, I appreciated Denzel Good. I watched him last year. I thought he was a road grader. I was really looking forward to him and Alex Leatherwood, who had another one road grader. And what I mean by road grader is that they're good at run blocking. They're effective at run blocking. And I was looking forward to seeing them, because I know Gruden likes to run right. He likes to run things like power. He likes to run stretch. He likes to run bunch crunches and things like that to the right. So I know that would have been a strength in his offensive arsenal. But now that they're not present, you still have to learn the timing. And I don't know enough about Illuminor to know, you know, where he came from, what systems he's used to. I mean, there are offensive linemen who are better equated to run a zone system than a man system. If you remember back to the great donkey teams, the Bronco teams, and when they were winning Super Bowls, their line was very good at zone blocking. San Francisco's line, when they were winning championships, very good at zone blocking, area blocking. So that there were times, but this is just and we're going to talk to Paul right now. So, but I mean, it's a lot of work that just has to be done. It's just timing.
Yeah, without a doubt. Back out to the Raider Nation listener line. We introduced him just a second ago, but Paul Gutierrez, mm-hmm. You can follow him at P Gutierrez ESPN. He is the co-author of If These Walls Could Talk, along with Lincoln Kennedy. He also covers the Raiders for ESPN. Paul, how are you doing, my man?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. We're talking about, Paul, the offensive line and some of the troubles that they've been going through, and, you know, kind of trying to talk through what might be going on with Richie Incognito. And, you know, he hasn't gone on IR with the new rules. If you go on injury reserve list, you're going to miss three games, whatever the next three games are, if you go on IR. But here we are heading to week three. He didn't practice again today. It kind of gives the indication that he's probably not going to play on Sunday. So there goes three games that, had they put him on IR to begin the year, he would have missed those three games, but he wouldn't be taking up a roster spot. Right. What do you – any thoughts that you have on what might be going on with Richie Incognito and what the thought process might be with the Raiders?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. In a couple of weeks ago, we saw him running on the treadmill in the middle of practice. Thought, okay, well, he's putting in some work, and he's keeping his cardio up. And if he's running, then that calf's got to be feeling a lot better. Well, in the times that we've been out at practice, you know, you kind of steal a glance into the weight room and take a look, and I haven't seen him. It does make you wonder if at 38 things just are not responding the way they should be or that you hope they can be, or if he had some sort of a setback there. Now, you know, John's not going to get into the specifics of any injuries for any players for his own reasons, but you do wonder if maybe at 38 the body's just not responding the way it does. And again, I'm not even trying to compare myself to an NFL lineman or anything like that, but I did. I popped my left calf simply doing a workout. We were doing like leapfrogs for a class that I was doing, and I couldn't move for 3 months or so. And to know that he is, you know, 300-pounder kind of a guy and putting all that stress and pressure on there, I could only imagine how long that's going to take for him to heal back from that, because just the slight kind of comparative injury that I had, it did not feel good. It felt like somebody kicked me right in the calf and it went out like that. So I was there when he went down at that joint practice with the Rams too, and it didn't look like that big of a deal at the time, but calves are really, really tricky.
Real quick, Lincoln, jump in with one more on that note. And I'm hearing and thinking along the same exact lines that you are. But then why don't you put him on IR to at least open up that roster spot? Because right now he's taking up a roster spot and isn't able to play.
Yeah, and that's the only thing you could think is that maybe he had some sort of a setback, because they were, you know, at one point it's like, okay, 2 weeks he hasn't practiced, 3 weeks. I mean, we're looking now at 6 weeks since that practice when he got hurt at the Rams facility down there. So that's the only thing that can come up to my mind is that, you know, he had some sort of a setback.
One that they don't think is going to potentially cost him the next three games. That's where I'm exactly. like that's the game that they're playing, and it could get complicated at times. But it's as of right now, he's taking up a roster space, and you know, so we'll see. I think Monday maybe, or when they have to make a decision on the next three games, we'll probably get some sort of clarity, I would think, anyway. Lincoln, sorry about that.
No, I was just going to say, Paul, you and Vinny have seen the new guys, the new additions out of practice. I know we only had a walkthrough with some of them. What have you seen, if anything, from the guys, the new guys?
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, Lincoln, I actually want to talk to you about it, it looks fairly seamless. I mean, with Luminaire going out there and just basically signing him off the street and putting him in there, now he's a starter. That to me shows that Tom Cable is either doing his job really, really well, or these guys are just really good at picking up things and going. You're right. I mean, we don't really know much about him other than he likes the show The Office, and he doesn't know who Ted Lasso is, being a guy from England. So it's interesting that they're able to just kind of plug and play. And I know as an offensive lineman that could be taken one of two ways, right? I mean,
right.
You don't want to be seen as just a plug-and-play guy, but hey, if that gets me a job, I'll be a plug-and-play guy. And and I asked Derek Carr about that today, is how does he compartmentalize that? Because these are the guys that are charged with keeping him healthy, keeping him upright, and letting him do what he needs to do. And he acknowledged that he's so locked in during a game, he looks at the huddle and says, oh, so-and-so's out. You're in here now. And that's how seamless it has been for him, at least through two games.
And it also, Lincoln and Paul, and to the listeners as well, sheds a little bit of light on what a pro personnel department does, because there are committed people, committed bodies to having a book, and it's a big book, on pretty much every player in the NFL who's crossed their radar or on their radar or crossed their paths or in any extent whatsoever. And so when you see that the Raiders go and sign like a Jermaine Luminaire or whoever they do sign, it's because there's people that know about him and understand, you know, Lincoln, you were asking, is he a zone blocker or more of a man-to-man guy? All of that information is readily available, and it's the teams that can stay on top of that and be able to jump when the opportunity presents itself or a situation determines it. The better pro personnel departments that know who's on what practice squad and what players on any of those practice squads or out on the free agent market can come in and quickly adapt and be an asset, those are the ones that are worth their weight in gold, because you have to get through a season. A lot of times you have to make the kind of moves that the Raiders have made. So a shout out to Mike Mayock and his crew, because that's what they're devoted to. But that said, Paul, do you feel like there's a commitment and maybe a determination to get the running game going? All things considered, the circumstance taken into account, all of that. But do you feel like this week they're going to try to make a concerted effort to get the running game going?
I think they have to, because, you know, and Link, you could speak of this too. John's offense is predicated upon the running game, and more so than that, just being balanced. Now, it's nice what Derek's been able to do, and he's thrown off for all these yards. He's leading the NFL in passing. He's thrown for the most yards in franchise history for the Raiders' first two games of any season. And that's all nice, and they're 2-0 and everything. But, yeah, they want to be balanced. They want to get the running game going. And you know, listening to you, Lincoln, during the game on Sunday, something you said really struck me was, even though the running game wasn't going, John and Derek turned the short to intermediate passing game, stretching the field into their pseudo running game. So mm-hmm. A lot of fans were tweeting at me and saying, oh, this is the Derek Carr of 2016. This is the MVP. I sat by and said, I don't know. This kind of looks more like Rich Gannon circa mm-hmm. 2001 mm-hmm. in John's offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you, Paul. The thing is I think that it wasn't like they haven't tried to make an emphasis to get the running. You saw it in the Baltimore game. You actually saw it in the Pittsburgh game. They were trying. It just wasn't well executed. And look, you got to take your hat off to those other guys too, because they get paid on the other side. So, sure. You know, it is what it is. But you know, if you guys want to remind yourself of how efficient you can do it, use the passing game as a sort of a run. Go back to the good old Oregon days. When Chip Kelly and those guys were going sideline to sideline trying to wear people out, they were using the short passing game and bubble screens and stuff like that to get yards, get chunks of yards. That's exactly what the Raiders are doing. So I think they're still going to make an effort to run the football, but because it's been ineffective so far, you have to have an option to where you can move the ball, and the short passing game is, I think, the answer for that right now.
Yeah.
I agree, and it's if you're John Gruden, it sure is nice to have those weapons and that in the playbook to be able to turn to. And so far, so good in terms of that. But I think that, as Paul said, and I know Lincoln agrees with this, they're going to have to run the ball at some point. It's just how it is. But Paul, on the other side of the football, you know, I can't tell you how many words we've spent writing and talking. Mm-hmm. About the importance of the Raiders getting a defense that they could rely on. It's literally been their Achilles heel these last couple of years, especially last year. Well, after two games, and we kind of had an inkling that it was headed in this direction, watching OTAs, watching practice, watching them against the Rams in those practices up in Thousand Oaks. But are you surprised at how quickly it seemingly has come together against two pretty good opponents in the Ravens and the Steelers?
Yeah, well, given how poorly the defense has played over the past few years, yeah. To answer the question, yeah, I am a little surprised. But it's also kind of a pleasant surprise, I think, for the Raiders and their fans, too. Because, having covering this team, you know, in one way or another since 2005, I can't recall the last time heading into a game where I sat back and thought, this defense is going to eat on Sunday. When it's facing this Dolphins offensive line and it's beat up and all the pressures it gave up and Brissett, you know, he's not very good against the rush and he's pressured all the time. I can't recall the last time I thought that, and that is a testament to how improved this defense is. Again, small sample size, only two games, but what impresses me the most is they're getting that pressure in those two games against two totally different quarterbacks. You know, Lamar Jackson, who's shifty and fast and is his own running back, and the big stationary statuesque Ben Roethlisberger, who took more hits in that game than he had in 5 years, I believe, and really it was the biggest hit the Raiders have given him since Richard Seymour dropped him with that open hand shot to the face mask a few years back. So that, to me, has been what has been most impressive to me about the defense, is the way they've been able to get pressure against two totally different types of quarterbacks.
Paul, can you speak to the energy that you've seen out in practice or just being around the team? The defense that Gus Bradley and this staff has brought them. I mean, I haven't seen this type of energy. I mean, even back when I played, we had an okay defense. It wasn't a standout the way these guys are playing the first couple of weeks. Can you speak to that energy or what that new energy that Gus Bradley has brought to them?
Yeah, he's brought the energy. He's also brought, as today, I believe Willie Ramirez said, some disciples. There's disciples throughout the defense. And, you know, KJ Wright, he said himself, yeah, there's disciples on all three levels. You look up front, it's Quentin Jefferson. You look in the linebacker core, it's KJ and Denzel Perriman. You look in the back, it's Casey Hayward. So you've got those veterans that know this system already. That's good, right? They're going to teach the young guys. Then you've got Max Crosby, who's playing out of his mind. And a lot of it is the clean living. You know, I did a story a couple of weeks ago about how he went to rehab to clean himself up, and he's dedicated himself to cleaner eating and nutrition and things like that, and it's translating onto the field. Yannick Ngakoue, one of the premier, you know, edge rushers in the game. And it all kind of feeds on itself, and it becomes tangible, really, and you can feel it. And again, going back to the quarterback, Derek Carr, he was asked after the game how nice and how much fun is it to actually watch the defense, and it was like he kind of took a whiff of the sweetest aroma you could imagine, or dipped himself into some healing waters, and was just like, yes, that's all I'll say. Just yes, it's nice to watch the defense because they'll take the lead, and then all of a sudden, in baseball terms, they'll get a shutdown inning, right? The defense will give them it's fourth down, we get to go back on the field with a lead? Awesome. So that energy and that vibe and that spirit is all kind of fed upon itself through these first two games, which they need to keep it going. Week three, because like I said, they should blow this Dolphins team out. But if they don't and if they lose, well, then it's kind of the same old thing, right? We'll see exactly how they respond.
The look and the reaction of Derek Carr when that question was asked about him, the yes that he said, that's pretty much my reaction when my mom cooks her chicken parmesan. I'm just saying, like, it's just that.
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's,
okay.
it's like when The Rock in WWE would take that deep breath and go, finally. You know, right. That's what it was like. It was taking that deep breath. That was Derek Carr at the podium that day.
Yeah, because there were some other thoughts going through his head. It's like, it's about time, you know, that had a defense like this before. But definitely worth the wait, it seems. And like Paul says, it has to keep going. But there's no reason to think, short of major injuries, that it won't. I actually expect him to get a little bit better as the season goes on. All right, Paul, last question. Henry Ruggs, the last couple of weeks, toward the end of the Baltimore game, came alive a little bit with a big pass completion or reception. And then Sunday, not just the 61-yard touchdown pass, although that was great. He was also involved earlier in the game on some throws. How big is his emergence, along with Bryan Edwards as well, in the whole scheme of things for what the Raiders are trying to do?
Huge, because they have to show that he's not just some decoy. He's not just out there to take the top off of the defense. Comparisons, you hate comparisons, but it's easy to kind of compartmentalize and realize what they're talking about. You know, the Raiders wanted him to be Cliff Branch. And if you look at Cliff's first few years, it took him a while to get going. But the difference was Cliff also had a Hall of Famer kind of mentoring him in Fred Biletnikoff. Henry's trying to figure this thing out on his own going forward. But it's huge, and I think it's real interesting to see that early on he was getting some short passes before he took the top off the defense and he took off going 22 miles an hour down the field, which is what they drafted him to do. And it all just comes back to me, a conversation I had with Mark Davis last year. He said, that was the only guy I really wanted in the draft. And that was his seal of approval. We all know who his best friend was, Cliff Branch, and you kind of go from there. So he's showing that he's not just a speedster. He's a football player. And I really want to see some more things. I want to see him get a bubble screen. I want to see him take a slant right across the middle and take off. You know, those old Tim Brown type plays. So it's going to be real interesting to see his development and his continued maturation in terms of football.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, it's interesting because there were three completely different wide receivers and a fourth, if you want to throw in Justin Jefferson for the Minnesota Vikings, that all had various different skill sets. But you know, and they would have been okay taking any of those guys. There's some really good wide receivers from that group last year. But for what they had already on the roster, it did make sense to bring in a speed guy like Henry Ruggs. He might not put up the spectacular numbers as a Justin Jefferson, but I don't think it was really designed to do that. I think it was designed to fit in with Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow, and then obviously hope that Bryan Edwards comes along too. So it was putting a puzzle together, and he was a piece that they really needed that brought a specific skill set to it. So you know, I know he's always going to be compared to Justin Jefferson and Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb, but in his own way, he could have as big an impact on his team as those guys have on their others. But we'll see. Paul, thanks so much for spending some time with us in the huddle.
Thanks, Paul.
Really appreciate it. Tell everyone where they could go get the book, If These Walls Could Talk.
TriumphBooks.com and any Amazon, any bookstore, any of your fine bookstores, they would have it as well.
Right? The fine right. bookstores, right? I like it.
The fine ones. Yeah. Only
maybe
the
it's Angry. Maybe it's Angry Crab later.
Might even have some copies at the Angry Crab. We got everything else, right?
There you go. There you go. All right, Paul. You guys can follow him at P Gutierrez ESPN. He's one of the best in the business, Paul. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
Very much. Thanks for having me, guys. Talk to you later.
You got it. That's Paul Gutierrez from ESPN and the co-author of a book he and Lincoln Kennedy wrote, If These Walls Could Talk. And yes, it is about the Raiders and their illustrious history and Lincoln's memories of his time with
memories.
The Raiders.
Yes, like the corner exactly. of my mind.
You are in the huddle with Vinny Monsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Wednesday.
No one gets you closer to the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy.
We're going to go right out to the listener line. Raider Thaddeus 502, I love saying that name, is on the line. How you doing, Raider Thaddeus 502?
Hey, man, you got me blushing, man. Thanks for having me, Vinny and Lincoln. First, I wanted to do something unorthodox as a Raiders fan and give a shout-out to a KC fan named Sam Broberg. He's marrying my mom and moving her to KC, and I'm looking forward to our friendly rivalry for years to come. But the reason I'm calling is to express how impressed I am with this team. Normally, I have hopes for the season, and almost none of them come true, and maybe there are even some disasters along the way. But this season, they all seem to be coming to fruition. We got Ruggs and Edwards showing out. You got our defense putting pressure on the QB and S-depth. Our secondary looks great. And you got guys at all three levels of the defense speaking Gus's gospel like apostles. So what I just wanted to say is, you guys think this is the best roster you've seen since we made it to the Super Bowl? Because it sure does look that way to me, and much love and respect, and thanks, guys.
Congratulations to your mom and your new, stepdad, it is. And I'm here's to many fun years, giving it back and forth to your to the new Kansas City Chief family member that you have. But Lincoln, I mean, I can't go that far. I don't know, to be honest with you. I'd be speaking out of my ear if I made that proclamation. But I can say this. It's the best Raider roster that I can remember within the last 5 years. And that even goes back to the 2016 team. I've looked at that team. It was a pretty good team. It sounded like it was a really opportunistic kind of a defense that got a lot of turnovers. Statistically, it wasn't all that great. We'll see how that all shakes out this year. But I just feel from a youth standpoint, from a foundational standpoint, from a salary cap standpoint, to the coaching standpoint, just where they are on both sides of the ball, the quarterback, where he is, a Darren Waller. To me, they didn't have a dynamic player like a Darren Waller on that 26 team, and it's been a long time since they've ever really had a player of that caliber. So, yeah, this is – I felt coming into the season that this was by far the best roster that they had to work with in quite some time, Lincoln.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. And, you know, in reflection back to that 2002 roster – now, I know that, 2001 was the Tuck Rule game, and some people argued that we did make our roster better in 2002. And just, I'm thinking about it, we had Sam Adams and John Perella as defensive tackles, Bill Romanowski, who was it? I think it was Tony Bryant and DeLawrence Grant, who had a number of sacks, but a very opportunistic defense. Eric Barton was one of the linebackers. Charles Woodson was one of the corners. Rod Woodson was one of the safeties. So, and Torrey James was the other corner. So, I mean, I think that we had a pretty good defense. And some would have argued the roster was better than the 2001 team that, or even the 2000 team that lost to the Ravens in the AFC Championship. So, with that being said, again, it's still early. We got to see how they play, but it's definitely a good thing to know that you beat two good teams or two playoff bound teams of last year. You know what I mean? So that's definitely a benefit to what we've seen so far of the defense. But they still got a long way to go. It's a lot of games to be played, but right now it's definitely impressive.
Yep, you're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Wednesday. When we get back, I want to give a little bit of credit to Mike Mayock and in conjunction with John Gruden, because I go back to the offseason and, you know, we talked about this a lot. To me, it made a lot of sense. To me, a lot of what they've done has made sense. Have they hit everything? No, nobody does. I just saw a stat, Lincoln, and we'll talk about it a little bit more, of everybody that the Vikings, Minnesota Vikings brought in, rookies, undrafted rookies, the whole nine yards this year, not one player played a single snap in their game Sunday against, I think it was the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, you know, when that starts happening, you got to start looking around, but that's definitely not going on with the Raiders. In fact, a lot of things that they've done has made sense, is why they are in the position that they are right now. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bossier and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila and Bachner. Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.